boats is a common, their sails are inside. Shrimp boats is a common, there's dancing tonight. Why don't you hurry, hurry, hurry home?
Thank you for tuning in to the Mile High Show. This is Matt Santos, and you are listening to episode number... Did I get it right? 154? Does that sound about right? I've been a little off the last couple of weeks. Yeah, episode 154. This is strictly a personal and selfish episode, I think. Well, I guess all of mine are. But when you own the microphone and the recorder, it's all about me, I guess. So... I had some family in town a couple of weeks ago, some family I haven't seen in many years, and as it tends to do when we have visitors in this part of the state, much of it revolves around where are we going to eat and what our next meal is going to be, and while we're eating that meal, we're discussing things like where we're going to have our next meal. So after a few days of bouncing around and seeing the sights and eating the food of the Prescott area, we did a trip up to Flagstaff as well. It was a lot of fun. We ended up at my sister's house, and I just decided to plug in my mic. So what you're going to hear is portions of a fairly lengthy conversation. I typically don't do a lot of editing for these shows. We usually just plug the mics in and let it run, but this time we talked for about 2.5 hours, well over 2 hours. Myself, my mother Mary Santos, and my two aunts, my mom's younger sisters Lucy and Bee, and we just sat around the table at my sister's house, my sister Mag's house, out there in Paulden, Arizona. And just talked, a lot of laughing, a lot of meandering conversation that doubled back on itself and repeated itself a lot. So I think I cut out most of that. And then, of course, I cut it down for just time and digestion. We're a little over an hour on this portion here. I shrunk it down a little more because as we are rebroadcast each and every Sunday at podcastradionetwork.net, they like us to keep it right at an hour. So this is a little extended by 5 or 8 minutes, something like that. At podcastradionetwork.net is a 1 hour version of this same show. I'll apologize right. Well, you know what? I'm not going to apologize. Well, most of when I record are on location. I've recorded at some very loud bars and nightclubs, out in parks, in cars, on the street. And none of those, including recording during live music events, is quite as noisy as this episode. I'm not sure what was going on in the background at my sister's house. Either my sister and my son Anthony were building an addition to the house. There was a lot of hammering and pounding, or they were running a full-on baseball game. I'm not quite sure, but lots of noise in the background, lots of jumping in by other people talking and stuff. But primarily, it's myself, my Auntie Lucy, and my Auntie Bee, with Mom jumping in every once in a while. We had to pause a couple of times. We had to stop recording as my mom's heart monitor started going off. So we had to pause for that. My son jumped up and wanted to talk about something breaking. Something broke. And then we took it a little extended break when a 5-gallon water jug fell down and hit him in the head. But everybody's okay. Everybody survived. And we had a nice, fun conversation. The bulk of the conversation has to do with what it was like growing up in a house of 11 kids in a 2-bedroom house in the San Francisco Bay Area, the East Bay, in San Leandro, California, through the 40s, 50s, and 60s. My grandfather, who I never met, my mom's pop, passed away when he was 42, and he 42 years old, the father of 11 kids, 11 that lived. There was a couple that died early on. You'll hear a little bit about that. But 11 kids ranging from, I think it was like 19 or 20 years old, to my Uncle Marty in the service overseas, to a brand new newborn son, my Uncle Sal. So at 42 years old, he had 11 kids. I cannot imagine what that was like. But you'll hear what it was like for these three young girls growing up in the late 40s and 50s. And through the ever-changing political and economic climate of the Bay Area 60s, you'll hear about economic trials, you'll hear about racial inequality and interracial marriages, all kinds of stuff. So sit back, and I hope you enjoy, again, like I said, a very personal and selfish episode. It was just an excuse to sit down and chat with my mom and my aunts for episode 154. All of our episodes are available at milehighshow.com. So check the archives there. You'll see some of my conversations with a lot of different folks. And of course, you will also see the Amazon link. Click that Amazon link at milehighshow.com to be directed to your Amazon or Amazon page, Amazon Prime login page, just like you normally do. But what it does is it tells Amazon that you got there through us, and we get a little thank you at the end. So please use that Amazon banner. There's a couple there. There's on the top. There's on the bottom of every page. They're right there on the front page. Use that Amazon banner for all your online shopping as a way to support, well, I guess support me. Make sure I don't have to come to your house and borrow money. Also, there is an Audible button right there where you can click on that. Use the code MILEHIGH at checkout for a free audio download and a free 30-day trial. They have over 180,000 audio titles from audiobooks, special content, podcasts, comedy, essays, magazine articles, a little bit of everything. At audible.com, use the code MILEHIGH at checkout for your free audio download, absolutely free. And again, they thank us a little bit at the end of every month. Also, BarkBox, happy pets make happy households. You can get free goodies and treats for your furry friends by using that link for BarkBox at milehighshow.com. So don't forget, milehighshow.com, where you can do Amazon shopping, you can get a free audio download, and you can get free stuff for your pets. And you can enjoy all of those while listening to my crazy aunts.
I think the first question is, how many bottles did you guys go through this week?
Man.
You're asking the wrong girl.
Yes.
Ask Magda. She did all the opening.
No.
I like how she gets those really nice $8 bottles of wine and fills them with the cardboard box she has out back.
They weren't $8. They were
$4.99.
Okay. Last time she had a drinking accident, it was a paper cut from opening the box. Okay, Beatrice. Talk about, I want to hear about, because we've always heard stories of mom growing up.
Yeah.
And just like now, we're never quite sure, was that in a movie you saw?
Or was that, let me tell you.
I want you guys to tell us about growing up.
So let me start out in the house that I knew. And I was one or two, just a toddler when they moved to San Leandro from Dakota. So that's the only house I knew. And I was there until I was 19 or 20. But it was a two-room house, front room and a bedroom, two-bedroom, one bathroom, front room, kitchen, and there was 10 children and two adults.
Now, where was this house?
In San Leandro on Estabrook, 537 Estabrook Street.
Estabrook.
And Estabrook runs parallel to Marina Boulevard.
Don't forget to ask me questions, too.
No, jump in. There's no questions. Just jump in. It's a conversation.
So,
I didn't want to interrupt your chewing. So where is that? Is that house still there?
It was torn down within the last 30 years or so.
Now, how long was that house in the family? When?
How long was it what?
In the family. How long did somebody from the family live there?
No.
When we sold the house, no. Yeah, we sold the house and moved to Clark Street.
Okay. So, and what years when you said you were?
I was 19.
No, no. When you moved there, you were born there, or you
no,
were born?
No, we moved there. I was told I was somewhere between a year and 2 years old.
Okay. So, who was that? Would have been you up, or was Manuel already born?
No. Manuel's 3 years younger than me. Okay. He was born. Manuel Lola and Chava grew up in that house.
Now, what was the neighborhood like there?
Oh my goodness, it was. We would live between two railroad tracks. So we grew up hearing the trains all the time,
mm-hmm.
and waving to the hobos and
is that how you met Dad? So what was the neighborhood? You got the
well, there were a lot of kids. And San Leandro was a Portuguese town. It was founded by the. Well, you don't know that. And so the school we went to was Lincoln School, first of all. And Lincoln School, I remember it being all Portuguese or white. Mm-hmm. And I remember that there was a family, the Lopez family, had a bunch of kids like we did. And I just remember that family and us being there. And there was a Chinese boy that was in my class. And maybe one other student came while I was still in second or third grade. That was Mexican, but otherwise I remember it was all white and Portuguese, so I felt out of place. And what the story was that we moved to San Leandro because Papa knew there was a Catholic school there, and he had wanted us to go to a Catholic school. And we were there for many years before I got to go to Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And when my father died is when I started Catholic school. No, it was even after that because when Father Ryan, who was the pastor at the Catholic church that we went to, he came to visit Mom, and he saw all these kids running around, and he said, "Why aren't they in the Catholic school?" And I remember so clearly, my mother said, "There was never room for us."
Hmm.
And what did that mean? There was never room for the Mexican children.
Hmm.
And I knew that so clearly then. And my father died when I was 9 years old. So I knew that very clearly when that was said.
At a very young age.
Yes. And so, and I didn't start at the Catholic school, St. Leander's, till I was in the seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when I started school in the seventh grade, it was the same thing. My mother was good friends with the woman that used to be the laundress at the school for the nuns. She used to do their laundry, but I got in because of, I'm sure Father Ryan made sure that I don't know how it was chosen to be the first one, but maybe they had room in the seventh grade at that time. So, but I remember very clearly that's why. And I didn't know anything about racism.
Yeah.
I still didn't know, but I knew what.
You knew your family was different.
Yes.
As opposed to the general population in the area.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, were you bilingual household completely, all Spanish in the house? The, what was the
so
what separated you other than
the bunch of kids?
Yeah.
There were other families with four or five kids,
yeah.
But there was 10 of us.
Yeah.
Until Pop, you know, died and Chava was born. But one of you asked about the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
The really cool thing about our neighborhood was that yeah, we were in between two sets of tracks, but we were also a dead end street.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in those days, a lot of the families didn't have cars, and if they did, there was only one car to a family.
Yeah.
So they all came down from two blocks up down to our street at night to play kickball, kick the can. Red light, green light, mm-hmm. baseball, or whatever, because there was very few cars coming through there because we were on a dead end street.
And a dead end, so that
yeah, and
block
during,
was the playground.
Right, and during and besides, there was a whole bunch of playmates in our house. So, but the other thing was that all the parents during the summer, all the parents would be sitting outside on the steps and yeah. all the kids playing on the street. So it wasn't, you know, it was really, really quite good in that sense.
Yeah. Different time altogether.
A very much a different time. And what Luce was saying about the hobos, they were quite a bit around in those days because it was after the Second War.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember. And Papa was always someone who would offer food if they came to the back door. But Pop always wanted to invite them in, and Mom said no.
But
she made them food,
yeah,
and things like that. And I thought I remembered this recently and said it to somebody because the train tracks on the right side of our house was the tracks that carried passengers, and that's where the troop trains during the Korean War. Pass by, and the guys would be hanging out the windows, and we'd be all on the porch. I remember Juana and your mom and me and Loopy and all of us out there waving at all the guys passing by on the train. I remember that so distinctly. And remember all the jets that used to come over because of Alameda.
Close to the airbase.
Yep, we were close to the airbase and all that sort of stuff. And Luce is right. Father Ryan was the one that actually started getting us in.
Yeah.
And he made sure to tell Mom not to worry about the money so much because
exactly.
that was the other big issue,
yeah.
of course. So when she got in, because the school only went up to the eighth grade, so Loopy was already in high school,
yeah.
you know, kind of thing. And I was the next one to get in, and I started in sixth grade. But then Manuel, Lola, and Chava started from first on up.
Ah.
So they were the
so
only
they
ones.
Went through the yeah. whole eighth grades there.
So who were your friends growing up? What were some of the ones? And are you
Sharon,
are any of them still around?
Yeah.
In touch with them.
But the family, there's a family with boys, and Sonny was the boy's name, and I don't remember. Bobby, I think, was the other one. But, and Sammy next door, family,
right.
Auntie Flo's brother,
mm-hmm.
youngest brother, Sammy was our playmate as well, because they were just next door. Because, remember, well, everybody married neighbors.
Where was the Santos clan in this?
Yes.
Behind and over one. Behind yeah. and over one.
Because we were right here, and Flo's family was right here next to the track, and then Herman's mm-hmm. family was next door.
The Limas?
Yeah, the Limas.
The Limas. So I guess Mary was, not Mary,
Juana.
But Juana was the first one to get married. And, but it was very different back then because they were never allowed to go out on dates
yeah.
unless Lupe or B, were you with them too?
I'm trying to, I think once or twice. I was pretty little at the time.
But
yeah, somebody else had to be with them.
The dueñas, the little girl dueñas.
Dueñitas.
So. Well, I want to hear about what, because I know what San Leandro was like before we moved out here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did a lot of work there, and then obviously with Dad working there for so many years.
Right.
We'd see, but to me it was, you know, it wasn't, all the towns kind of blended in. You know, you go Hayward, San Lorenzo, San Leandro, it all kind of blended. I saw it
after a lot of growth, especially
correct
in the late 60s, early 70s, when it ballooned up to just blend into neighborhoods that all looked alike. What was,
That's not so. Huh? That's not so. Like any other big city, there was a demarcation street, and that was Bancroft. And above Bancroft were all the nice houses, and only white people lived there.
Yeah.
But I did not feel the same thing that Luce felt, and that's because a lot of my friends were Portuguese, and I looked the same as them. The only time I recognized the difference was when one of my white girlfriends, and I never saw them that way, came over. And with all of us kids, you know, mom had a bedspread on top of the couch to try and keep it clean and all that. And it was hanging this way and that and all kind. There's all kinds of kids running in and out. And the first thing that she said is, "Ooh, I like your house. It's so comfortable." But she grew up in a house where nobody could sit in the parlor unless there was company. So it was a very different, different attitude and stuff like that. But it was a time, a period when you can walk around, take walks at night, which we did a lot of. The nicest thing was those memories of playing outside.
Yeah.
And the side of our house, we didn't have lawn. There was no lawn. It was dirt, but it was fine dirt, and it was perfect for playing marbles, digging the little holes. And so our neighbors from behind, remember...
Escobars.
Yes, the Escobars. They would come over, and we'd be either playing marbles, making mud pies, or running wherever, you know, wherever. The interesting part about it is that one of our neighbors across the street was Japanese. And, of course, this was right after the war. Yeah. And what did I know? But I would go over there. The mom would let me play with him. His name was Hiroshi. That's all I remember. I don't know if you remember them or not.
And there was a little girl, too.
I don't remember that. It's the boy was my age, and so that's why I would go over there, you know. He was allowed to play in front of the house, but not outside the fence.
Yeah.
But what did I know? I didn't realize why at that point in time. And different at that point, then we had the Cruises moved in way down the street, and they were Filipino. So we were allowed to play with them, and they had like a half a dozen kids or something like that.
But I think the mom was Mexican or something else. She was not Filipino.
I don't know. I don't know. But at any rate, we were able to play with him until one of the girls got pregnant. And then we weren't allowed to play.
Priscilla.
Was it Priscilla? Okay. And I think she was like 16 or 17, something like that. She was young. She was a girl. She was a girl. But there was a lot of going back and forth, and that those old-fashioned things about going next door and borrowing a cup of this or that or whatever, that was true. That was true. And the ice man, because we had ice boxes, not refrigerators, so the ice man would come with a block of ice. And then, of course, with all of his kids, he would take his ice pick and chip off big chunks of ice for us to suck on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But everything came to us. So the Iceman came to us, the cleaner got the cleaners, you know, give him your clothes. He'd come in a van and you bring, you know, pick up your dirty clothes and then bring back your clean clothes. The guy, the bakery guy would come on Fridays. Remember him in the red truck?
But back to the Iceman. Auntie Juana and the Iceman had a thing going on. they would always flirt with each other.
But keep in mind, because my dad was still around, she wasn't allowed to date or any of that stuff. But, I mean, in those days, life was easier. The milkman came.
Yeah.
And all of these people knew that there was a lot of kids in our house. And every so often, the bakery man would give mom an extra loaf of bread or something and all that kind of stuff.
Or give Auntie Juana a lemon meringue pie.
There you go. And the milkman did that, too. The milkman did that, too. Every once in a while, he'd leave an extra quart of milk or whatever. And that was the kind of thing people did back then because it was an individual.
The milkman used to come into the and put them in.
But
come into the house.
Yeah.
Now, well, they can do that now, but you got to call a cop.
I don't remember that one.
But it was there. What are you talking about? But it was what an interesting life. And after Pop died and Marty got out of the service, Marty was in the service, actually.
When did he go
in? He was
in
the Air Force. He was, what, 19, 18? No, he was younger than that. He must have been 18.
I remember when he said, oh, boy, I want to go kill Japs.
No, that wasn't Marty. No, 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 that was our uncle.
Hinato?
That was Uncle Losario. But
it could have been you, huh?
Lazaro, whatever. But Marty was there for the Korean War. The Korean
so he
time.
Went in after.
He went in after.
So
he never saw action.
When
never saw
he born?
Action. I don't know. He was 86 last year.
Yeah.
So 30.
I can't do math.
No, wait. I think he was. Yes, he was born in 1930, I believe, because he was born at the beginning of the decade.
Okay.
And mom was
36.
Yeah.
Right.
So he was 30. He went in 19, so 49-ish? 49,
yeah,
50, 48, 49, 50.
He was already in when I was four, okay. So whatever that is.
And Papa died when he was 52. No, 42.
42.
Oh, wow.
So
Papa
he was very young.
Yeah.
And that's the when Chava was born.
Yeah,
just 2 months.
Okay, let me finish this thought, because what I was trying to say was that Marty was overseas. He was shipped over to Okinawa. And when Papa got very, very ill, they called him back to come see Pop. But he didn't make it in time to see him. Papa died that morning just before he got there. And so what they did is they sent him, I can't remember, he told me, but they brought him back to California so he'd be close to the family until he got out. And when he got out, I don't know if you knew this, but Uncle Marty had a horse. He worked at the ranches up on Skyline.
Oh, wow.
And one time he brought a horse. I don't know if you remember this. He brought a horse all the way to San Leandro so he'd give us all rides.
He rode
the horse from Skyline down to San Leandro to do that.
You don't think of Oakland as horse country.
I know, but up on Skyline there are ranches that have been there for a long time, you know. So.
What's that park that's up? Well, I don't know if it's Skyline, but up there.
Redwood Park.
No, there's another one up there, I forget.
But
it was so exciting to have
beautiful area.
Yeah, to have your brother come down with a horse. Oh,
wearing a cowboy hat too. You know, all of that sort of stuff. So that was really cool.
Nice.
So even though we did, and I've shared this with other people before, I was 14 before I knew we were poor.
Yeah.
I knew we didn't have a lot, but we never starved. We always had company, we always had playmates, we wore hand-me-down clothes. That was okay, but it wasn't until I was 14 where I had to have money to take the bus to go to high school that I realized, we are poor, aren't we? But I think that's a testament to how families were back then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It sounds like a real sense of community in the neighborhood.
The fun times we had.
Yes.
Like what? Tell me some of the fun.
Well, I would take you, girl, because I always, girls would do, you know, what I wanted us to do.
Right. Yes, always.
All the time.
You were pushy back then, too.
She was the boss then.
Yes.
No. My mother would say, you know, go outside and play. Well, I used to think, they want to have fun, too. And so I made my heart say, I'm going to help them to have fun.
Yeah.
So, my turn?
No, not yet. I want to say, because I was going to say this before about your mom. The one thing that I really, really remember is you have to understand there would be 5 or 6 kids in one bedroom. And she would, on Saturday mornings in those days, all the kids' programs were on the radio.
Yeah.
So we'd all lie in bed and hear them. And when we listened to everything, then she would tell us stories. She would tell us stories, and we'd stay in bed all kind of listening. And we would expect she was the one, she was the storyteller for us all the time.
Was when we were growing up, too.
Oh, right. Okay. and she used to dress us up and have us do shows. Did she do that?
I got to hear a show. Tell me about a show. Tell me about a show.
I do. I remember one specific.
She dressed us up in curtains, old curtains,
yes,
and made shoes for us. And put makeup on us, and so, and she told us what to do exactly.
tell me, okay. Go ahead, B.
What Lou said, and I never forgot this. It was a Saturday, and Mom was gone. I was what, 8, maybe somewhere around there, and she made the boys go out, Manuel and Chava, leave the house, and the bigger boys were gone, so it was just us girls in there, and. Lupi used to sing a song called Shrimp Boats Are Coming. Yes. But then I used to dance. She put a sheer curtain on me, and I was supposed to do all the dancing. And Manuel and Chava, being the scamps that they were, there was a water pipe outside of the house with a window by the front room. And, of course, all of a sudden, we heard all this giggling and laughing. Manuel had shinned himself up to look in through the window because they weren't allowed to come in with us.
I think you know. We used to walk them out of the house.
Yes, we did.
The boys can play outside.
But your mom used to choreograph.
Oh, so dramatic.
No, I wonder how... I felt for you children, your daughter.
And I knew that.
You said real life dolls. That's it. She tries to make it all about you. No, I was thinking about you and the fun you needed.
She was.
Well, that's exactly where I felt. My heart felt that you should always have a good time too.
Yeah. I felt that because you made sure that we had a good time.
Yeah.
And the storytelling that you did and the shows that you had us put on. I don't remember quite what I did, but...
Yeah.
But I was...
Let me finish! Jeez, I raised my hand for crying out loud!
But you're...
I raised my hand!
There's going to be a fight!
What happened?
Go, finish! Finish!
She's always even the other night.
Will you control your sisters?
They're older ladies now.
Yes, but the other night.
Just finish your story, because we're doing this.
Well, the fight is part of it. Because she's always interrupting me.
I did this. That's all I did.
But
we'll get to the whole drive out here. I think that's going to be...
The drive was fine. No fight.
She slept.
I had...
Okay, go ahead.
Now, what?
Yeah, I forgot now.
I forgot, too. I want to go back to all the neighbors that we had that intermarried... Uh-huh.
That sounds bad.
That what you guys did.
Getting closer.
But Herman and Juana were the first ones to get married, and they had a great big wedding. But what they weren't allowed to date very much beforehand, and Mom was on her own by then because Pop had already died. And
so balance with one
and I know she had an argument with Juana when she she knew that they were going to get married, but when Juana came to tell her that they had set a date and they were going to get married, oh my goodness, it's not funny, but Mom started to have a fit and get very angry at her. Because she said that everybody's leaving me, and I'm sure she was feeling Pop leaving her. But she was the first one to get married, and she felt deserted.
Yeah. What year was this? When did Juana get married?
What, 50-something, in the early 50s.
Early 50s?
Well, Danny was 61 when he died, And he was about 62 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the early 50s.
Yeah.
Your mom got married in 58.
Oh, yeah. How do you know that?
Because I was born in 59.
Okay, good. Thank you.
She counted.
Yeah.
And she remembers.
I don't know how
so who got married next? Who was after Juana?
And after Juana was Bill, Uncle Bill. And he married...
Yes. Wait, she interrupted you. You didn't say a word.
She can interrupt any time she wants.
No, it was close.
They can forget together.
That wasn't nice. That wasn't nice. That wasn't nice.
I'm going to get a popcorn bowl across my head, aren't I?
Juana married Herman.
Yes.
And I married Ernest. Yeah. Behind Bill.
I mean, so is that the order that it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's the right order. She knows.
That's the order.
So, So
what? Nobody else was interested in any of the other Santos boys?
No, they were all too much. No. Okay. So wait, that's true because I love Sonny.
Leonard.
Sonny was quite handsome, and he was very kind to me. And he as a little kid.
Yeah. And he was a baseball player. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. But because your uncles used to play horseshoes on the empty lot. Well, they owned it, the empty lot next to Flo's house. And so when I saw them, and if it was sunny, I was out there.
And how old were you?
Five, six, somewhere in there.
Well, they were all older.
I love Sonny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I do want to say one thing, something else about how your mom helped us. And it's when Marty was already gone in the Air Force. And we talked about this the other day. We went on a carpenter's picnic, and we went up this big hill, but we slid down on cardboards on one time. And so she would help me. She would write the letters that I wanted to send to Marty. So I was like four, and she'd say, okay, what do you want to say next? Okay, I would tell him that we slid down the hill, blah, blah, blah. So she helped me do that. So there was even through the tumultuous, the arguments and everything else when I got married, there was always a connection with Marty. And, you know, that was somewhat mended years later, but yeah. And you didn't notice that we didn't say anything about Marty getting married.
Haven't got there yet.
He's the oldest, though.
Yeah.
And we didn't know if he was married or not.
Well.
When did he get married?
Not until he met Millie. And Millie was the first one he married.
Okay, the other one he was living with.
Yes. I mean, that's. Scandalous. I don't think that's for the air, but.
It's a true story.
It doesn't matter. His son is still here. I don't know how much his son knows.
Nobody listens.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting because I think Marty really did not like to be around all these messy kids. And even his son, I mean, Mark comes over every so often, and he said, oh, my dad was like everything had to be neat and clean and put away and this and that. But it comes from all of that, you know, being the oldest of that many kids. Comes from
so.
So back to the marriages, because Juana had this huge wedding, and all her. I was not in the wedding. We were too young.
Mm-hmm.
But you were in the wedding. Yes, and Herman's sister, one sister or two sisters were in the wedding, but there were about 9 or 10 bridesmaids.
My goodness.
And I think that's the wedding where they all had a different colored dress.
Your dad wore your mother's dress for Halloween one night. Okay, so you want to talk about, you want to talk about truth. The truth is that we never talked about the fact that Herman's mom never wanted them to get married.
Really?
Really. And really didn't like that whole thing, whether it was racial. One of the things was they always used to say she was too fat at that time. And that was a big thing, and there was a lot of dissension for years and years. And as a matter of fact, there was a lot of the family did not talk to them for a long time. There's a brother and a sister that did keep, you know, keep.
Yeah.
But, keep in contact
but
with him.
But he did have a sister that was heavy too, Lorraine.
Yeah, but she wasn't heavy then. She was heavy later.
I remember she was her later heavy all the time.
And what was so weird—not weird, but it's probably commonplace—because his mom always had a grumpy look on her face. Do you remember Mrs. Lima having her mouth was always turned down. She always had a scarf on and stuff. But guess who took care of her when she was sick before they died? Juana. She stayed with Juan and Herman. Yeah. Yep. Hmm. I always thought, yeah, that's how it goes. You know, you may be not want this girl because she's not good enough for your son or whatever, but who took you in when you needed it?
Yeah.
You know, so that was interesting. That was a very interesting thing.
Back to the school years when I got to St. Leander's, it was very interesting because I remember I got to school and I didn't have a uniform. I didn't have the shoes I was supposed to have. There was a girl whose father had a shoe shop. And the Sister Marguerite was the principal then. And she talked the girls, the young girl in seventh grade, to take me to her father's shoe shop and get me shoes. And I remember the argument she was having with her father to give me a pair of shoes. And I was just, I was going to get my shoes. And I didn't feel anything embarrassing about it. But I did get my shoes. And I know the girl had to argue with her father about it. Hmm. And back to Gracie, who was my mother's best friend. Mm-hmm. And her two children, younger children, were in the school already. Marcella and Enrique, I think.
Henry Enrique,
were the only other Mexican kids in the school at the time. Until everybody else came along from my family. And Mom would send me with the tuition regularly. And at one point, Sister Marguerite said, "You don't have, tell your mother you don't send any more money." And so I imagine that we all went tuition free after that, but I'm not sure.
As long as Father Ryan was there, I think we did, because he's the one that made sure we got to the school. And there was, at that point, there was only five of us that went through this. Only five of us went through school.
Half the family.
Half the campus.
But that was it. And I remember I used to, I wasn't ever comfortable at Lincoln School. But then I remember when I got to St. Leander's, it was a totally different story because I immediately made friends. But once I got to St. Leander's, two girls immediately befriended me. And they were both Barbara Mendez and Barbara Souza, both Portuguese girls. Mm-hmm. And they were my good friends for the 2 years I was there. Mm-hmm. And I would go over Barbara Mendez's house, and you knew her sister.
Mm-hmm. Her sister was in my class.
So we would sometimes do homework together. The three Barbaras would do homework together. But I'll never remember how that happened. I all of a sudden had friends and good friends, and that was wonderful. And when I graduated from the eighth grade, Uncle Bill stood in for Papa. At the graduation, he did the father-daughter dance with me. And the people were, my girlfriends in the school were wondering who that young, handsome guy was, you know.
Well, what year did you graduate from high school?
From high school, 1960, so it's been a long time.
And what about you? What
was 62.
62. What was, where did you go to high school now? The St. Leandro's went to?
No. St. Elizabeth's.
They went to eighth grade?
No, we went to St. Elizabeth High in Oakland.
But St. Leander's went to eighth, is that correct?
Yeah,
and then high school at St. where?
St. Elizabeth.
St. Elizabeth?
St. Elizabeth.
Commercial break, yes, sir.
Flower pot fell down.
Well, that's Auntie's problem. That ain't my problem.
You're playing with Auntie. It's her house. Okay, commercial break over. I'm sorry. So you went to high school where?
To high school in St. Elizabeth's.
St. Elizabeth.
All of the girls, well, Barbara Souza decided to try out for Bishop O'Dowd High School, and that was supposed to be the high school for the wealthy kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's where your boys went, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So I showed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Barbara Mendez tried out for St. Elizabeth's, and she didn't make it.
Hmm.
And because you have to pass a test, and if you don't pass the test, you don't get in. So I got to go to St. Elizabeth's, and there were five boys from my class that went to St. Elizabeth's as well.
How did the area change when you guys were going through high school? Did you see a major change from the elementary and junior high into high school as the 60s started creeping up a little bit?
Well, the major change that we saw in the cities was the white flight started. Mm-hmm. White flight from the neighborhoods because people of color were allowed to buy houses mm-hmm. in certain areas. Oh, and that's when we saw the white flight. Because when I was a freshman in high school, High Street was all white and considered like one of the better mm-hmm. parts of town kind of stuff.
High Street, wow.
Yeah. But then as soon as, you know, housing laws changed and people of color were able to buy in all areas, that made a big difference. So we saw a lot of that white flight. But when I was in high school, and I had lots of friends and stuff, but in high school, there was probably only five people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few of us Mexicans. Well, actually, no, I take that back. It's closer to 10. And my class was one of the biggest classes going in, which was like 118 students or something like
That's
that.
That's good
Very
size,
small.
Yeah.
But the thing was that for the majority of us, it wasn't a problem at all. The biggest problem was finding the dime to catch the bus to and from school. That's when I discovered we were poor.
Yeah.
Because there was many a time when I went to the bus stop without any money in my hand to get home, and then hoping to find somebody there that I could borrow a dime from to get home.
Now, what was the bus trip like to school?
How it far? Was, what, about a half hour?
Yeah, about a half hour. 40
minutes.
34th Avenue from
Oakland. You know where Auntie Nupi lives?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where the school and the church is on 34th Avenue. And we were in San Leandro by Marina.
Oh, wow.
So that was a trip. That was a trip. But I made a lot of friends. In fact, I'm still friends with one of the girls I met there.
Nice.
And
nice.
We talk and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so that's kind of nice. And the best friend that I had in elementary school was another girl that was just as shy as I was, if not more.
You were shy?
Oh, I'm allowed. Doesn't mean I'm not shy. There's a difference. There's a difference. So, yes, I was exceedingly shy. I was telling somebody, I said, the first date I went on, I didn't say a word the entire night.
Hmm.
I didn't.
Who was that?
That was me.
No,
who did you? Who was
no,
you
I know what she was saying.
She's going to ignore.
It was one of the Estrellas.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go?
We went to a carnival. I didn't even scream or anything.
You could have just stayed home and been at a carnival.
I know. We just smiled at each other, and it was his brother-in-law. I don't remember who he was married to that gave us a ride there and back.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we were 14, I guess, maybe, or something like that.
Which style? Alvino?
It was, yeah, I think it was Alvino. Yeah.
Hmm.
He was about my age. Do you remember the Estrellas? They had as many kids, if not more, than
they
us.
They had more.
I think they had more.
14, I think.
Yeah. So we all had playmates. Mm. Then some. But that was the thing. I mean, we played outside and, you know, there was no restrictions in that sense.
Yeah.
Mom was concerned about the hobos, but in the most part, they were just guys coming back from the service that were kind of a little bit lost. You know, but we never recognized it as such at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and we walked from our house to go to church. We walked down the railroad tracks.
Mm. The track was everything.
Yes. And in those days, I remember being late for church, and I was six, maybe. walking to church by myself.
By yourself.
Yeah. So, yeah, we did a lot of things back then that we wouldn't allow our children to do at all nowadays. Yeah. You know, so.
So both of you stayed primarily in the East Bay. How come?
I had a good experience in high school, but it was true about the people of color. When I started school, I was placed in the college track because they didn't know I was Mexican. Had to take Latin and algebra, and I don't remember what other class, but Latin was the one. Everybody else took Spanish. And I remember the principal, his name was Father Ronald. I went to the principal, and I asked to be put in the Spanish class. He said, no, you already know Spanish, assuming that I was bilingual, but I wasn't really. And I remember thinking at that time and later, like I had to give him credit for not doing changing me because he kept me in the college track. When they had some counselors or somebody come from the outside to tell us what we were best suited for. And I remember the woman that was talking to me, she told me that I was suited for office work, and that's what... But I'm sure there was something else on there, but she looked at me and didn't say that. And that's when I kept being reminded I was different.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't try to do other things. For the second time, I realized, didn't know the word racism, didn't know anything about that.
Did you go to college?
No, I got a job. I got a job with the county, and I became what you called a stenographer. I don't think there's any such thing anymore.
Shorthand, a foreign language now.
Right. But that's what I became, and that's where I met my ex-husband.
I was going to say, is that where you met Ken?
Yeah.
You didn't marry somebody from the neighborhood. Did you break ranks? Thing.
Soon after I met him, he bought a Porsche. But he was good looking at the time.
Aside from the blonde hair, what was his hair?
At the time.
Did he have long hair back then or no?
Long hair?
Yeah.
No, he was...
I always remember him with long hair.
That was after...
Long hair and a headband hanging long out in the bleachers at the Coliseum.
That was him. That was after...
Yeah.
After, but, and he wore raggedy clothes. But that.
My hippie Uncle Ken is what I remember Ken looking like. But, where'd you run away to, B? You're next. So, how many dates did you go on before you spoke?
Are you talking to me? Yeah, because I went to a dance and didn't speak. It wasn't until. Was it senior year, junior or senior year that I met someone and he's the one that kind of got me out of my shell and I dated him for a year or so. And that was fun. He was a musician, which was like, oops.
Ooh. Fast.
Yeah, pretty much.
What did he play?
He played... piano and a couple other instruments, mostly piano. Though.
What kind of music? Where
Latin.
In the
Latin.
Oh, Latin. Yeah.
Latin kind of music.
So what did you do after high school?
I went to work, and I went to St. Elizabeth High, so I went through some of the same things, but the one thing that happened, went through the whole counseling thing and stuff, but they gave us a test first and sort of, you know, those... tests that say, the aptitude, you know, what you seem to be better at and stuff like that. And, you know, they said that I would be better as an entrepreneurial, having my own business and things like that. But I didn't believe them. But anyway, but the county used to come in and give tests for their stenographers, their secretaries, and all that stuff. And I started out on the college track, but I didn't really care too much for my classes, so I didn't do as well. So then I switched over to business and did well there and did well enough to be offered a job right off the bat. So
what was your first job?
working for the county.
Yeah.
But I got there and I realized I really didn't like it. But I felt like I had to say yes. I did those days, yeah. You know, having the choice to say no to a job really wasn't there.
But a government job, security.
Exactly. You know, family and all that sort of stuff. But they let me go, and I felt so sorry for the guy because I knew exactly what he was going to do when he called me in. But they had, you know, that little window of time where they can let you go.
Like a probationary kind of period.
And I sat down and I looked at him. I said, oh, he's going to fire me. And sure enough, he let me go. And it was fine with me.
What was it? What capacity were you working for the county?
I was secretary. I did I did shorthand, typing letters, answering phones, and all that kind of stuff. But I realized that I didn't particularly like it the way it was set up there. And one of the ladies there was helping me out, trying to help me, you know, get me, you know, up to speed and stuff like that. But I realized I didn't like it.
It wasn't something that you...
No. So after that, I went...
What department did you work in?
I don't know. It was in Hayward on Winton, and there was bus service was sucky.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So it was really hard getting there and getting home and stuff like that. But after that, I went out and found a job with J.C. Penney, and that's where I met my friend. I don't know if you remember my friend Loopy Boone.
No.
Well, I was 18 when I met her, and we're still friends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, I met her at J.C. Penney's, and I worked there for a few years. In those days, when I was interviewed, they could ask you if you were married, were you on the pill, were you planning to have babies. They could. It was at that time, it was still legal to do those things, you know.
Don't hold your breath. It might be soon again.
I know. Again, it might come back. But at any rate, I worked at JCPenney's for a while, and then I realized that I wasn't making enough money.
Yeah.
And somebody had tuned me into a job. And in those days, it still is, but even worse in those days. And I was supporting mom and my younger siblings.
What are we looking like, 64, 65-ish? Or
no, 63. 63,
okay.
Yeah, so I was making $57 a week back then. And it was decent.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. Huh?
For a girl.
Well, yeah, let me finish. But anyway, back then, it was the men were getting more regardless. And I went into the boss and I said, I wanted some more money. And he said, well, no, you didn't. And I said, wait, so-and-so in the mail room, the guy, was making more than I was making. It's just a conversation. Yeah. And he said, well, you know how it is. There's family. I said, he doesn't have a family. I have a family. I'm supporting the family. And I was surprised that I did that for myself, but I did. And he said, well, you know, that's the way things were and all that, blah, blah, blah. So I went out looking for another job, and then I went from there. I went to Western Union and worked for Western Union, answered phones, did telegrams, then did teletype, and then ran an office and all that kind of stuff. So,
how long were you there?
Long enough to meet your uncle.
Okay, let's get to there. When did you meet Mr. Burney?
64. In 1964.
Yeah. And what was he doing at the time?
He had just gotten out of the army, and so he was just doing telegram delivery.
Ah.
And so he'd stay at his substation. And
so you met as co-worker, working together. Okay.
Well, yeah, he'd come in.
I thought maybe he was going in and sending a
nope.
sending a telegram.
But I had seen him, and from the small time that I had with my dad... The first time I was aware of black people was when we went to Swans, and Papa talked to everybody the same.
Swans
was a store. It was like everything you can buy under one roof. On the bottom floor, there was butcher shops, record shop, the shoe shop, the barber.
Lunch counter and so on.
Everything.
Swans lunch counter was like a...
It was a...
Okay.
Open air market. It was an open air market, so to speak. And then upstairs you can buy clothes. So we did everything there.
Yeah.
And the thing was that Swans, everybody went there, regardless of the color of your skin or anything like that. That was the one place where everybody was kind of equal. I saw him, and all I saw was the cute guy.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything else. And I know I was naive to a certain degree, but that's all I saw.
It's amazing how certain things need to be learned that shouldn't be learned.
No, for sure.
You know, yeah.
But so I would see him come in to pick up telegrams and stuff from the guy Woody and the other guy. And one time Woody noticed that I was noticing, and so he introduced us. He was the one that introduced us.
And how did that go over? What was the climate socially for, you're saying?
Depending on who you were with. Okay. Let me put it this way. Two brothers did not come to my wedding.
Huh.
So one was absolutely not invited, and the other one decided not to come.
Huh.
So there was a climate within the family. And oh, my goodness, for Grandma, when I first brought him home, what will the neighbors think? And I said, these neighbors? I don't care. You know, and I do remember one time when we were living on Clark Street at the time, and he and I had just gotten back from a date, and we were sitting in the car. We weren't even necking at that point. We were just talking. We were sitting in the car, and a cop car pulls up to us, shines a big spotlight into the car, and Dad, Bernie was saying, hey, turn that off, please, you know, trying to. And he said, what are you guys doing? So, sitting in front of my house. Yeah, right. You need to leave right now, thinking that I was probably some hooker or something like that. And so we went in the house for a minute, but he was the one that was aware of that more than I was. But mom had a problem, and then once she realized, you know, that her problem was not going to be my problem, that was it. The one that I had a blowout session with for some hours was my brother Marty.
Hmm.
That was his problem again. So that took a long time to get through.
But you got that.
8 years, but I used to tell him 10. And he would believe me for a while.
Repeat that again. I didn't get that.
She asked me how much older Bernie was than me.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was funny because at work, we didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
In fact, we ended up having to invite more people from work than we had anticipated because they were expecting to be invited.
Yeah.
You know, but it was purely a family affair. His family just took me right in. There was no issue there. But again, where he was raised, his mom's best friend was the Mexican family across the street.
Yeah.
You know, so there was quite a mixture because he was raised in Richmond.
I was going to say, what was hometown for him? So still East Bay, but just up
right,
a little bit.
Right, but the family came here when he was about 6 years old from Louisiana. Nacogdoches, Louisiana. And his dad brought them all out here because it was before or after the war to work in the shipyards.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up in Richmond.
Booming industry, jobs, money.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, so he was one of five kids.
So when did you get married? What year?
65. Yes.
Big changes coming in the Bay Area specifically, but the country overall.
Yeah, but even so, when I was engaged is when I don't know if you remember, but I had to have my appendix out. I had surgery. Dr. Velarde was my...
How long did you see Dr. Velarde?
Forever, and then I took over.
He was the only doctor for a long time, right?
No.
I remember Dr. Velarde.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I went to him for years and years.
Guy.
Yeah. He was a good doctor. He was a good doctor.
I never
But
knew.
Anyway,
I hadn't heard that name in years.
Yes. So I'm in the hospital. I was in the hospital? I can't remember if it was during an appointment or what it was. But when he met Bernie, and when he and I were alone, he said something about, you know, he said something about the difficulties of marrying somebody of another race and stuff like that. And even when we went to the church for the pre-Cana stuff, the priest said the same thing. And he said he wanted to make sure that we knew the difficulties that we would be involved and blah, 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 blah.
Other than the issues internal in the family and that stress, did you experience...
Yes.
Housing. Yeah.
Housing was always an issue. Lots of times I just went. But if we went away for the weekend or something and we were going to stay at a motel, Dad went to go get the room. So right off the bat, they know this is a black person. And then when they saw me, that was another story.
Yeah.
And
So he hit that big hurdle.
Right off the bat. And but even when the kids came along, I remember we went to look for a house, and one of the men said, because he saw the kids, and saying, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then, so for me, staying in Oakland, that meant a lot, because Oakland was the place where we did not run into that so much as in the form of housing.
And like, as opposed to the suburbs or
right.
something like
as opposed
that.
Opposed to right. San Leandro, too, right? Yeah.
No, I did, we didn't look in San Leandro, well, yeah. but we found a house in Castro Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was, that didn't work.
I was
so
going to say, that would have been
no,
tough
that
now.
Was the one. That,
that
was,
could be tough
exactly.
now.
Yeah. Exactly. But, I mean, people were concerned. And I remember a couple of friends of Auntie Lupe's that knew me. Mm-hmm. And when Lupe had talked with them and said, you know, that I was marrying someone that was black. And she said, well, B could do better than that. You know, mm. so that was the mentality
well,
of all that. But I don't know if it was good or bad that I was naive enough to not even
yeah.
be concerned about that, and was not concerned until my kids were in their teens. Then I was more concerned.
In what way?
Because they would, pardon me, go to certain areas, and they treated all dark kids the same way. You got to watch them. They're this, they're that, blah, blah, blah.
So watching what they had to go through right. triggered.
Yes,
yeah.
that more so than anything.
Yeah.
And the, but, you know, from his side of the family, no, that was never a problem. You know, that part of it was never a problem. So it was on my side.
Tell me more in detail about his occupation.
Because depends.
We have, I have, I shouldn't say we, I have, as you found out this past couple of days, my memory is not normal for lots of reasons. But I have things and conversations and experiences that I have no idea if they actually happened or if I'm remembering stories people told me or remembering going through shoeboxes full of pictures.
Right.
And in my head, they're real. And then people are going, that's not what happened. You know, that's not what it just because I've as the youngest hearing stories. And then later I find out that, no, that you never even met that person. But those stories I've heard have been so real.
And you're not Apache.
I never heard that one. I never heard that part. That was just a Sal. That was just a Sal issue.
Yeah.
But hearing different stories of, you know, things, family reunions, weddings,
but,
whatever.
But that was, it was the older kids
yeah.
that knew him. Because he went to all the family yeah. functions, and then he finally said, your family has a party for everything. At a drop of a hat. But, and he finally said, I'm done.
What did he do? What now? Did
he worked at a couple
he was a cartoonist, wasn't he? For a
that's
while,
that's what he wanted to be.
Okay, you tell me, and well, then it'll fix what I forget.
He did.
That
he
I don't
did.
Know.
He worked for oh, I forgot the name. It some electronic company. After we got married, we decided it would be okay for him to go back to school, get mm-hmm. his AA degree, you know, go from there. Well, of course, the minute we decided that I got pregnant, so. The day he was supposed to take his first final was the day Anais was born.
Hmm.
And I'll never forget that because he said, I've got a final. And I said, that's okay. Call mom. So I called mom. I said, mom, Bernie's got to go to school. Will you go with me to the hospital? So we drove to San Leandro and picked her up and then went over to, where was Anais born? Peralta Hospital. Hmm. That's where. You know, and then mom stayed with me. Bernie went to school, and then he came back.
How did he do on his final?
He didn't. He told the teacher what was going on, and then he came back to the hospital. And by that time, you know, I'm having labor,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And mom's standing next to me. And so mom says, you know, touches him and said, and then started to leave the room. And he's like, no, that's
your job.
Please. He didn't want her to leave the room because he didn't know it was going to happen. But he went to school, got his AA. He worked, I can't even remember the electronic company. He worked at BART for a little while when it was first starting up. He did a lot of photography for people. He mm-hmm. painted really well a lot of
the
times.
Paintings in
we
the
can't
house.
Find his sister had some of his paintings, and when she passed away, her kids could not find them.
Hmm.
And then some of the good ones that we had at home, I'd go in the other room, and he's painting over them. With oh yeah, so Auntie Lupe has one picture that he painted for her specifically mm-hmm. to go over the couch kind of thing, and
yeah.
she still has it. And the Oh, that's my phone. And the other one is he did one on velvet for me. And I still have that. The velvet's kind of tearing up. If you look in the back, it's black tape holding it together. And, you know, the last years, he pretty much stayed home with the kids. And I worked because I got better benefits and everything else. So that's the way we did it. But he'd go out and somebody would say, you know, come take pictures of this or that. And he'd get paid for that and things here and there and whatever. So that worked out for us, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. And then he cooked for me 25 years for 25 years.
Did you pay the poor guy?
Oh, boo.
A roof over his head.
You got it.
Sounds like Sandra. So what are you doing now? You guys are both very active in lots of things.
Yeah. See, I'll take it here because when Bernie got sick is when I kind of stepped back from a lot of stuff I was doing. But all those years that I was working, I was also one of the leaders in, the organization is called OCO, Oakland Community Organization. And it was a faith-based organizing group. And we started out, it was a neighborhood group, and then it went to some of the churches to gather people from there, and that's when I came in on, and that's like 40 years ago.
And what's the mission for that?
The mission was to fix our neighborhoods.
Okay.
At that time, we were having a lot of drug dealing that was going on in front of the St. Elizabeth's Elementary and High School. So we had kids, and we had a lot of old ladies and, you know, the seniors and stuff, and so we got rid of it. We met with the chief of police and all the people that worked, and so we did a lot of things over the years. But I was really busy going to meetings 3 or 4 nights a week. Actually, Bernie got really upset because one of the meetings when we were doing, you know, working with the police on the drug dealers and stuff, he's like, they're going to know your face. They're going to know your face.
Yeah.
But I had to do it. And, you
what
know,
years
I,
were you doing this? What?
Let's see. The kids were in elementary school. Jeez.
Mid-70s?
70s, yeah. That's when it was.
And
in
you
the
continued
70s.
For?
I continued up until 7 years ago.
So the working within those organizations specifically, I'm thinking what was popping into my head was mid-late 80s, 90s, when the big and violent drug activity was going on.
That was part of the reason why Bernie was really kind of upset. But, you know, we had to get them out of our school area and out of our church area and stuff like that. And that's what was happening. So some neighbors allowed the police to come in, set up cameras and stuff like that so that we could record. And it took us a few months to get them out. But we did. We did do it. We did a lot of things. And sometimes I'm amazed at what we did. And the big thing, I mean, I never knew that I could do that, but they taught us how to sit at the table with the mayor, with your council person, with the governor, with state senators and all those people. So within that group, it gave me an opportunity. That's where I went to New Orleans for conferences and various meetings and Washington, D.C. to meet with, you know, all of our elected leaders and so on. Was in a lot of meetings. Jerry Brown was our mayor. So, you know, we did a lot of things and a lot of things that I never thought I could do. They were the ones that taught me how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
So no more not speaking at carnivals. You speaking out and loud.
Everything. Is coming, there's dancing tonight. Why don't you hurry, hurry, hurry home? Why don't you hurry, hurry, hurry home? Look here, the shrimp folks is a coming, there's dancing tonight.